Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on illegal immigration when we come back. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow three rules. It's called location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or government agents. And that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is that all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make short, terse statements like these. Listen to this first judge who said, quote, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" Now, that judge said that in U.S. v. Dickerson. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester. Listen to the second judge. He said, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." He said that in Belknap v. United States. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now, the third judge put it this way. He said the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti v. United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4900. 67. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. Well, of late and over the past several years, a lot's been said and is going to be said about illegal immigration. But I'm not sure that everybody is very well informed concerning illegal immigration. We hear a lot of stories. A lot of people have opinions and sides to it, so I thought let's take a look at some of the facts and figures that go along with it, and then let's see if you want to make up your own mind here as to whether this is a good or a bad thing. Depends upon the politics of it. There are a lot of people making a lot of money off of all of this illegal immigration, and that should tell you why we have so much of it. Now, the estimates kind of vary as to how many illegal immigrants we have in the country. They range from the official estimates that come from government of about 11.5 to 12 million to the unofficial estimates, which I suspect are probably closer to accurate, of upwards of 20 million. Whether it's 12 or 20 million, there is an avalanche of people in the country, and that avalanche of people has some economic impact, whether they're taking all of our jobs and that's why we're unemployed, that's the contentions of some, or whether they're all here taking jobs that no American wants anyway, That's another contention, another opinion that we'll investigate. Or it's some middle ground. That is, they're here taking jobs that nobody wants, and they're paying taxes in the process, and those taxes are good for all of us because the more taxes they pay, the less tax we have to pay. And there's some question as to whether or not they pay as much in tax as they consume in services. And we'll investigate that and we'll give you the numbers. There's a dark side to all of this illegal immigration, and you can take your pick. Schools, hospitals, parks, roads, urban sprawl, police, the judicial system, water and sanitation systems. Well, anything that more people impact upon, illegal aliens impact, and they often, to a far greater degree, impact upon these services because they generally aren't paying for any of it. And also, many spend as little as possible and then send all their money back home, as noted in the December 2006 article by Daniel Gonzalez in the Arizona Republic. Poor workers scrimp and send money home. Now, regardless, one of the most common comments from Americans regarding the May 1st, 2006 boycott was how much less traffic was on the highways and cities where the largest boycotts were occurring. So when you have these boycotts or you have these demonstrations, who is it that's creating the boycott or who is it that's creating the demonstration? Well, think about it. If you were one of 11 million people in the country and you didn't want any changes in the immigration policy that might throw you out, wouldn't you want to march down the street with a placard or a banner that says, "Stop all of this anti-immigrant fervor"? Seems like to me that it's kind of self-serving on the part of the illegal immigrants. But then, after all, they're serving themselves, aren't they? That's why they're here, to serve themselves. Well, taking a look at the number of dollars going overseas, Mexico's second largest earner of export dollars is the illegal immigrants in the United States. The illegal immigrants are sending home about $18 billion a year. Only oil produces more revenue to the nation or to the country than the illegal immigrants that are in the United States. Now, it isn't that the illegal Mexican immigrants are a big drain on us. There are two other countries in the world that are a bigger drain than the Mexicans. The Chinese immigrants in this country send more money back to China than do the Mexican immigrants. And then the African immigrants in this country send more money back to Africa than do the American or the Mexican immigrants here in the United States. So there's three big drains. $18 billion to Mexico, $36 billion to China, and 20-some billion to Africa. Now, when we add those up, let me just try this. I don't have the African number right in front of me, but the 36 and the 18 and the 20-something, so I'll just put 20 on there, is $74 billion a year. Now, we Americans are importing into the United States a certain amount of big-screen TVs, tennis shoes, oil from the Arabian countries, and so on, and it totals $800 billion a year, and we export $200 billion. Well, this $74 billion is an import. We are buying something. We're buying the labor from these people that come in here and they work and then they send that money home. Now, that $74 billion that's being sent home is above and beyond any taxes and services and etc. That's a net drain. That's like you taking $74 out of a $100 bill and putting it in your gas tank and then going down the road and burning it up. It's just gone forever. So it's a balance of payments deficit of 74. Now that's for those three sources. Now that doesn't include the Philippines and Indonesia and all the rest of the countries around the world, which I would imagine would be another $25 billion. I mean, it isn't just the Chinese, the black Africans, and the Mexicans that are the illegal immigrants. In fact, we've got a breakdown here as to where the countries are that these people come from. And they come from all over the world. And they come here to all, well, not all per se, but nearly all the states in the Union. The main states that they're attracted to are California, Texas, Florida, Illinois, New York, Arizona, Georgia, New Jersey, North Carolina, Washington. Now, in those states, they are the majority, but in all of the other states, they comprise about 3 million. So out of 12 million people in the country, 25% of them are in the other states. And that leads me to believe that if 75% of the foreign exchange going out of the country is by these main actors, then the other 25% of the actors must be putting up about 25% more, which would lead me to believe that the total number, or about 1/8 of the foreign exchange leaving the United States, is caused by the combined illegal aliens in the country. Whether that's 11 million or 20 million is academic, because we already know how many dollars are being exported because the nations involved are telling us. The president of Mexico, the former president, his name was Vicente Fox, told us when he was leaving office that Mexico was receiving $18 billion a year. It's probably more than that now, but at that time, $18 billion a year from their foreign nationals in the United States. All right, and the Chinese tell us the same thing. The Chinese tell us, well, you know, last year we got $36 billion from people sending their money over here to their relatives in China. And so that's fine. More power to them. But the moral of the story is that's costing America 1/8 of our foreign exchange. So there's a time coming shortly when that foreign exchange is going to be shut off. It's called a siege, an embargo. We see it in Bible prophecy, and we also see it from common sense, and that's because we're not paying these people. We're sending them IOUs. And at some point in time, they're going to cut us off. They have to get paid, you know, sometime. The bank needs to get paid, and if they don't get paid, then they start eviction. All right, now, before discussing the specific impacts of illegal aliens in detail, we'll take a look at some information on immigration in general so that we can put immigration, or in this case, illegal immigration, in its proper perspective. Now, we often hear that immigration is lower now than it was in the past. Well, that depends on the definition of lower and past, and what the speaker includes in the term immigration. Now, as the chart illustrates, legal immigration is close to the high peaks of 100 years ago and is far greater than the levels of 1886 when the Statue of Liberty was dedicated on Liberty Island. Of course, we all know that the Statue of Liberty welcomes immigrants to the USA with Emma Lazarus's famous poem, The New Colossus, which contains the words, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." However, what you may not know is that those words were not affixed to the Statue of Liberty until 1906. And author John T. Cunningham noted that the Statue of Liberty was not conceived and sculpted as a symbol of immigration, but it quickly became so as immigrant ships passed under the statute. However, it was Lazarus's poem that permanently stamped on Miss Liberty the role of unofficial greeter of income and incoming immigrants, as noted by John Cunningham. Emma Lazarus's actually had other ideas. Now, when we look at the legal immigration into the United States, it actually peaked in 1907 with about 1.5 million immigrants. 1.5. Legal admissions to the United States by single years, looking from 1820 to 2004. So, the immigration, annual legal admissions, peaked at about 1.5 million in 1907. In 2002, which is about the number I've got here, it's about 1.2 million, I'd estimate there. Now, that's the legal. Now, the illegal immigration into the United States totals about 500,000 per year from Mexico alone. Now, there's not as many people coming in from China and other places, and the most used modality for illegal entry into the United States is just walking across the border or flooding across the checkpoints. The second biggest way of getting into the country is to buy a ticket anywhere in the world. Just buy a ticket and come to the United States as a visitor. And anybody can do that. Anybody from anywhere in the world who has the money to buy a ticket, you just walk down, buy a ticket on United Airlines from any country in the world, fly to the United States, and you can stay here for 6 months. And you just write down tourist. And we're trying to sell more tourist tickets and get more people to come here. Now, when they get here to the United States, they just don't go back. They just disappear into the woodwork, and then they go to work, or they get a false ID card or social security number or something like that and stay here. Now, the poorer people, the people that don't have the money for an airplane ticket and come here as a visitor, why, those people, they have to come across the border, or they pay less money. You know, they pay $100, $200 and some coyote brings them across because they don't have $300, $400 to buy an airplane ticket. Now, I remember as a youngster, Frank Rocha used to bring his brothers over here. He had 3 or 4 brothers over in Portugal, and they would come over, and they could stay for 6 months, and then you'd go in and you'd get an extension. You could stay for 6 months more. So they'd stay here for a year. They would work for Frank. Frank would not pay them. He would send the money directly to Portugal. See, you can't come over here and work on a tourist visa. So they worked. I mean, they stayed with Frank, and they worked here. And that was the objective. But, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And so the solution to the problem is fairly simple. It's no big mystery. They simply send the money back to Portugal, and you can do that all day long. People send money over to Switzerland to their secret bank accounts, and anybody here in this country that wants to send money to Mexico City or any place in the world, you just get onto Western Union and ship it. All right, so now that being the case, keep in mind that when Frank's brothers came over here to work, that meant that somebody else that lived here in this country, Frank was going to hire 3 people to work on the ranch. 3. Every year, 3. Now, he preferred to hire his brothers because they were his family. Now, they didn't have any right to work here in the United States, and he didn't have any right to pay them here. He could have sent that money to Portugal anytime he wanted to. But he took their labor in exchange for money in place of paying that money to an American citizen. And that's what's going on here in the country. So it may be true that the average Joe Sixpack does not want to milk cows, shovel manure, or do the other kinds of work that are attendant to ranching and farming and so on. You'd probably rather draw welfare or maybe work in an office or do something else. But the moral of the story is, here in America, we used to, don't anymore, but we used to know how to work. Americans could work. Well, now we're getting to the point where we have a social welfare state, a fascist socialist welfare state. And now we have been taught and trained from childhood that work is onerous and that we shouldn't be out there doing that. So that'll give you a little insight as to how that worked. Now, in 2005, we allowed 1,122,373 legal immigrants permanent resident status in the United States. As the above chart illustrates, the current legal immigration into the USA, with a current population of 300 million, is similar to the great waves of legal immigration around 1900, when the population was much lower than it is today. In fact, in 1900, the population was 63 million, about what the combined population of California and Texas is today. Now, that chart, however, does not display the illegal immigration component as the following chart does. Now, probably back in 1900, there was a certain amount of illegal immigration going on that I can't report on because I don't have the numbers. But if you've got illegal immigration going on today, and in those days, you know, we didn't even have passports until I think it was 1953. So when people came to this country, they came in and they immigrated here. They were welcomed. We didn't have an immigration quota until 1922. So there was free immigration into the United States, except for Chinese. Orientals could not come here. But all other races could come. There wasn't any restrictions. And many of them did. Most of them were Europeans that came over. Note that we now see that the numbers of immigrants are higher than they have ever been, and the numbers of illegal immigrants is approaching the number of legal immigrants. Some of the newer data actually indicates that the annual number of illegal aliens entering the United States now exceeds the legal immigrants. So we are admitting into the country today 1.1 million legal immigrants. Hell, that's as of 2005. The illegal immigrants coming into the country equal that amount, and half of those are Mexicans. So it isn't all Mexicans coming in. There's Chinese, there's Africans, Indians, Asians of other countries, Filipinos, and there's all kinds of people coming into the country. And as I mentioned, when you're coming into the country from China, the Philippines, from Indonesia, you know, Africa and so on, it's very difficult to do without an airplane ticket. Coming into the United States from Mexico is very easy to do because you can come across the border. And that's what the Mexicans are opting for, because why buy a ticket? One, I can walk across the border. Or in the case of the border crossing points, they just get 100 or 200 Mexicans together, and they just storm across. Just 300 people just run across the bridge. And, you know, there's five or six agents there on the bridge, and they catch, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 of them. It's kind of like playing that old game called Red Rover, Red Rover, you know, let Georgie come over. And then the guy that's it stands in the middle, and he's got to tag you, and you're trying to dodge this guy. And then pretty soon it's Red Rover, let everybody come over. And then the guy, he tries to tag as many as he can. Well, when 50 kids charge across, from one side to the other, he catches three or four, but the vast majority get all the way over. So, now that's one other way that's being done. That's not a guarantee that you'll get in, but it's a good one. It's a good one. So as it appears today, we probably have about 2.5 million people coming into the United States. 2 million at least, and probably closer to 2.5 million a year coming into the country. About half of them legal and about half of them illegal. Something on that order. Now, the net result is that the overall immigrant population in the United States is now the highest that it's ever been, as noted in the following chart. Now, it totals about 33 million immigrants in the country at this moment in time. Well, you know, as of 2002. So go to the Department of Homeland Security's Yearbook of Immigration Statistics for detailed information on both legal and illegal immigration. So with our new Department of Homeland Security, see, their job is to protect us from terrorists. Well, you know, I don't want to be rude and obnoxious here, but, you know, with 2.5 million people coming into the country, and all you need to come into the country is a passport and a visa with an airline ticket. Now, there are watching people, you know, if you're a Muslim or an Arab, you know, and you get on an airplane, they're probably watching you pretty close. But, you know, you can come into the country from Mexico. For instance, let's suppose that you're a terrorist from let's bring in from, say, Iran or Iraq or something like that. You buy an airplane ticket to Mexico, then you come up to a border town and you pay a coyote, that's a Mexican smuggler, $100, and he'll smuggle you into the country. I don't see that Homeland Security at $37 billion a year is any great value or any great deterrence to terrorists coming into the country. Especially when you got 2.5 million coming into the country, of which half of them, you don't even know their names and addresses. All right, so that being the case, let's go on to, however, since we're now talking in absolute terms, it's worth noting that the Wall Street investment firm, Bear Stearns, published a report called "The Underground Labor Force is Rising to the Surface." In January of 2005, with claims that the illegal alien population was double the official government estimate of 9 million and was closer to 20. Now, that was in 2005. Bear Stearns, out of business now, but they said that the government estimate of 9 wasn't anywhere near accurate. Now, remember, the government today is not stopping this illegal immigration. They are not building the fence down at the border. They're giving a lot of lip service to it, but they're actually not doing anything. Going back in our history, in 1930, President Hoover stopped immigration coming in from Mexico. Stopped it. President Truman, in 1946, stopped immigration coming across our border with Mexico. Stopped it. And then in 1954, President Eisenhower did the same thing. So three times in our history now, we've stopped people from coming in here. So we could do it again today, but we're not doing it, and there's a political reason for doing it. There's an economic reason, which is an undertow, but there's a political reason why this isn't being done. And it also bleeds over into Bible prophecy. The stranger that's within our gates is going to rise up high above us. Well, that's got God's fingerprints all over it. Just looking at Deuteronomy 28, that prophecy, 20 million illegals coming in at the rate of 500,000 a year from Mexico, and about 1 million, a little over 1 million, 1.2 million or so, coming in total from other countries in the world. And right away, you know, that says to me, hey, we got God's fingerprints here, right here at the scene of the crime. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Just call and ask for it. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about illegal immigration. While we're at it, we're talking about legal immigration as well. The legal immigration numbers are about 1.1 to 1.2 million a year, and the illegal immigration is that high or higher every year. But most of that illegal immigration is not from Mexico. There are a lot of people coming in from Black Africa, the Caribbean countries, and from Asia. Now, here's an interesting little kicker. You know, the Cubans have a special little inroad. If a Cuban can get into the United States, he can apply for asylum and it'll be granted to him. Now, that's a little special perk that just the Cubans have. Now, we've got this special little perk, and then we have the Coast Guard out here in the ocean guarding the approaches to Florida. It's 90 miles now from Key West to Havana. So just 90 miles across. But we've got the welcome sign out that says no trespassing. All right. Now, the Cubans are dumb, you know. Cubans are not dumb. So the Cubans take a flight from Cuba to Mexico City. Then they disappear in Mexico, go to the border, and then they come into the United States. Now, once they get here, they can apply for asylum. So, you know, it's like a game of cat and mouse. Now, the Americans aren't dumb either, see? So the Americans went down to Mexico and said, okay, now wait a minute. Every time you get one of these Cubans in here, you watch that Cuban and you don't let him get north of the border so he can sneak into the United States. So the Mexicans are just working their hearts out with the United States to keep the Cubans out. But the United States is working hand in glove with the Mexicans to let the Mexicans in. Isn't that special? So if you thought that the United States government now is working here at the border to keep this illegal immigration out, or to keep the Indians and the Indonesians and the Chinese out, oh, no, 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 no. The Mexicans are taking the heat because they're next door and they're poor. But the more affluent, the more educated Indians and Chinese are coming into the country with their visas, and then they just disappear when they get here. So you got a big problem from Asia. And you're being enveloped here by the Asians as well. All right, going on here, the net result is that the overall immigrant population in the United States is now the highest that it's ever been. Now, in October of 2006, Virginia Abernathy, Ph.D. and Chairman of the Population Environment Balance of Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, that's a title, isn't it, published a report. And the report was called Census Bureau Distortions Hide Immigration Crisis, Real Numbers Much Higher, where she claims that 7.2 million aliens enter illegally each year. And she notes that the Census Bureau is a willing participant to misinforming the public on the state of the nation. Illegal immigration information from the U.S. border report, migration across the Mexican border, also supports much higher numbers. Now, if Bear Stearns is correct, the immigration numbers would double. If Dr. Abernathy is correct, then the numbers skyrocket. Now, in either scenario, scenario number one, official illegal immigrants in the country, 12 million, that's the government. And they're not stopping it. In fact, they're encouraging it. Congress just took a vote the other day, I think it was in one of the committees, and all but four voted to stop construction or to restrict funding of the border fence. Now, what's that tell you? See, that tells you that they want more of these guys coming in. All right, that's the official. Now, Bear Stearns in 05 comes up and says, no, our study shows that it's 20 million and growing. And then we have the numbers here from the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Census Bureau distortions hide the immigration crisis. And they estimate 7.2 million every year coming in. It's not the 1.2 million that the government's telling you about. Now, that being the case, that fits perfectly with the stranger that's within our gates rising up to destroy us. Because the destruction of America requires, first of all, that we destroy the economy. The American economy must be destroyed before you can have a military destruction. And it's already accomplished. Boys and girls, the destruction of our economy has already happened past tense. So it's not something that we're waiting for. It's already been done. Now, we're in the transition period between the destruction of the economy and then the military destruction. And this destruction now we've been describing over the past several weeks as being a contract problem that we have with our Creator, as outlined in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Now, a a useful tool in accomplishing that goal is to invade the country with multiple millions of soldiers, civilian soldiers. These aren't soldiers that are carrying guns and coming in here shooting you. These are soldiers that are coming in here destroying your economy and setting you up for the eventual military occupation and destruction. These are the shock troops coming in first. Now, that's already been accomplished. That's a past tense deal. Now, in any case, and using official numbers, when the immigration percentage rate was higher, 100 years ago, it was then that the population was about one-fifth of what it is today. So immigration numbers are now far higher than ever experienced in U.S. history, with an already crowded nation. The additional illegal immigrants are negatively impacting American society. And part of the reason for this is the difference in times between the two great waves of immigration. So these illegal immigrants, well, you could put the legal ones right along with them. It really doesn't make any difference if these guys are legal or illegal. The immigrants coming in to a nation that is already full of people places an economic strain on the country that the other people in the country have to pay for. We're coming to that as we progress along. Now, remember these deficits that we're running up? Like California has a $19 billion deficit, and Los Angeles County has a $222 million deficit. All right. We'll see as we progress along here that those two deficits are accounted for perfectly by the increased services that these immigrants are placing upon the society that they're not covering by work and paying their own taxes. So that means that we have to make up the slack. Now, if we don't take up the slack, then you have a budget deficit. And if you have a deficit and you fund it, then you have inflation. So that's where the hyperinflation is coming from shortly. And so it shouldn't be too much longer. I don't think we're talking 10, 20, 30 years. I think we're talking about 2, 3, 4 years. So, you know, get ready for this one. The basic problem with immigration of today is that it is not your grandparents' immigration. The situation today is much different. Society is much different. The country is not underpopulated, and the illegal immigrants have different skills and motivations. And your grandparents didn't receive welfare payments. See, back in 1900 to 1920, nobody was receiving any welfare payments. When you came to this country, you either made it or you didn't. As reported in the June 13, 2006 issue of Newsweek, in an article, The Hard Truth of Immigration, by Robert J. Samuelson, he said, being brutal and brutally candid means recognizing that the huge and largely uncontrolled inflow of unskilled Latino workers into the United States is increasingly sabotaging the assimilation process. And no society has a boundless capacity to accept newcomers, especially when many are poor and unskilled. I might point out here where he says no society has a boundless capacity to accept newcomers. This is the only country in the world that does this. You cannot immigrate to China or Japan. If we Americans went across the border into Mexico, the way Mexicans come here to the United States, we would end up in prison for 10 years. They don't allow this in Mexico. But, of course, they encourage it here in the United States because it produces $18 billion a year in foreign exchange. If Americans did this, it would cause $18 billion a year to flow out of Mexico. They ain't going to sit still for that. I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee. That being the case, then, we Americans ought not to be doing this, but we are. And it's partly out of ignorance. See, I don't think the average Joe Sixpack American can count. I don't think he's ever had anybody do the arithmetic for him. So that's why I thought, well, this week, let me do the arithmetic for you. Let's lay it out to you in spades. Here's what it's costing you. Here's how much they're producing. Here's what the deficit is, and here's who's paying it. Now, there's a reason for it, and I've mentioned this to you before. The reason is expressly to destroy the United States of America and to merge it into a new world order under the United Nations. That's what's coming down. That's what we're going to accomplish. That's what we're doing. Now, in the final analysis, we're going to have a military occupation. When this occurs, you people in Australia are dead. D-E-D, dead on arrival. You people in New Zealand, Canada, you're going to be taken over and deported just like we are. And the people out there in the Pacific, look north, you Australians, look north on your map. That's China up there. Those Chinese, there's 1.3 billion of them, and they need some more real estate, and they're coming down taking it. There's only 20 or 30 million of you Aussies down there, and they're going to do away with you. You're called useless eaters. All right, now as noted by Stephen Malenga in How Unskilled Immigrants Hurt Our Economy, he said, since the mid-60s, America has welcomed 30 million legal immigrants and received perhaps another 15 million illegal immigrants. These numbers are unprecedented in our history. These immigrants have picked our fruit, cleaned our homes, cut our grass, worked in our factories, and washed our cars. But they have also crowded into our hospital emergency rooms, they occupy our schools, and they take government-subsidized aid programs, sparking a fierce debate about their contributions to our society and the costs that they impose upon it. So now we're getting down here to where the rubber meets the road. It is true that these people are cutting the grass and washing the cars and picking the grapes, and they are paying taxes. At least the legal immigrants are. Now, a question arises, do these unskilled immigrants coming into the country from Haiti, the Dominican Republic, from the islands of the Caribbean, from the black continent, the dark continent, from Asia, do these people actually contribute to, or do they actually take away from, the net resources of the nation? And the answer is they take away from the net resources. Now a question arises, well, how much? And the answer is they take about two-thirds more than they put in. So they're putting in a dollar and taking out three. This is what the net works out to be. We'll see that as we progress along. So for every dollar that these immigrants are putting in taxes, they're taking out $3 in services and benefits. Now the rest of us, we're putting in $1 and we're taking out nothing. Well, there has to be then three times as many of us putting in our dollar as there are immigrants that are taking $3 out. Otherwise, we're going to come up with some shortages. Now, notice that we have budget shortfalls and shortages. You see, we've already now gone beyond the tipping point. Remember, there's a tipping point in all of these discussions. And here in America, we've gone beyond that tipping point, and now we're on the slippery slope. And a question, of course, always arises, well, what do we do to get off the slippery slope? I don't know, and on top of that, I've been looking at it for a good long time, and I don't think we're getting off. Even if you could get a majority of Americans in this upcoming election to elect a new slate of candidates, and you went to work on the border, and you stopped all of the illegal immigration in the country. I mean, you shut off all the Mexicans coming in, you shut off all the Indians and Chinese and everybody else. You already have a population within your borders that is so large, shipping out $100 billion a year in foreign exchange, that that oven by itself will more than bankrupt the nation. You would have to go back and take a look at the 30 million legal immigrants that you brought in beginning in 1964 and deport all of those. Revoke their citizenship and then deport all of them to save the nation. That isn't going to happen. That's not going to happen. So what that boils down to, it's like looking at our debt. Our debt in this country is $100 trillion. That's public and private. It's actually more than that. If you add in derivatives, that we have what's known as the quadrillion Death Star, as Robert Chapman calls it on the International Forecaster. But if you just took the debt, we can't service the interest on that debt. And that being the case, we're already, as the Mugambo calls it, doomed. You're already doomed. And that means that in order to change this, it's kind of like Los Angeles is upside down by $222 million. Well, the obvious solution is you cut everybody's pay in half, that's all. Well, that isn't going to happen. The unions aren't going to go along with that, and the people that have their wages cut in half, they're not going to go along with that. And we can't allow them to go bankrupt. And so what we're going to do is just print the money and stick it into circulation. And that'll stave it off for a while. But the ultimate end to that is every dollar that you're putting out there buys something off the shelf. And so the ultimate end is shortages. That leads then to wage controls and price controls, and that is the ultimate end of this. And then famine, starvation, bankruptcy, default, hyperinflation, military occupation, and the demise of America, which is where we're headed. It's just a matter of, well, how long is it going to take to get there? The only guy around that could save our bacon at this juncture of time would be God himself, and he said he's not going to do that. I mean, we could force him to do it, you know, under the terms of the old covenants with specific performance. But that would take more effort, I think, than Americans, Britons, Australians, and New Zealanders are willing to put forth. So when students come here, we have a school here called subsistence and survival. We tell them very plainly, you know, this is where the Titanic has already hit the iceberg. You see, we're not talking about slowing down and steering south. The water's already pouring in, and the fate of the ship is already determined. All we're determining now is who lives and who dies. We're not going to save the ship. All we're concerned about is who lives, who dies. Women and children first. See how simple this is? Hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but that's the way the game is played. Now, these workers add very little to our economy. They come at great cost because they're not economic abstractions. They are, in fact, human beings. And they have their own culture. And they have their own ideas. And their culture and their ideas are often at odds with our culture and our ideas. Increasing numbers of these new immigrants arrive with little education and none of the skills necessary to succeed in a modern economy. Now, many may wind up stuck on our lowest economic runs where they will rely on something that immigrants of other generations didn't have, and that is a vast U.S. welfare and social services apparatus that has enormously amplified the cost of immigration. Just as welfare reform and other policies are helping to shrink America's underclass by weaning people off of such social programs, we are importing a new foreign-born underclass. As famed free market economist Milton Friedman puts it, it's just obvious that you can't have free immigration and a welfare state. Now, in the early 1900s, we had free immigration, but we did not have a welfare state. Now we have free immigration, which is at a higher pace than we had in the early 1900s, with the welfare state, which benefits these foreigners coming in at the expense of those of us who are here now. So, for instance, let's take affirmative action. Affirmative action was put into place so that you blacks could get a fair shake in getting into colleges and universities. It didn't work out that way. What it benefits the most are the new black arrivals from Africa who use these mandates to get into colleges and universities. Only 12% of the native blacks actually end up in college. They have one of the lowest rates. I think it is the lowest rate, unless the Hispanics are a little lower. They might be. I forgot who's at the lowest rate. Highest are the Jews. They're at 70. The Orientals are the second highest at 30%, and then the whites come 27%, and then the next, and so on down. So what we're looking at here is a phenomenon that is unsustainable and unstoppable. It's unsustainable because it's drawing out more, costing you more than you can put in, and it's unstoppable because the people that are already here want more of it. The government doesn't want to stop it, the big businesses don't want to stop it, and the American people don't know enough to stop it. The immigrants themselves want more of it. The only group in the country that would want to stop immigration would be the taxpayers and citizens. And when they're polled, their numbers are just a little bit over 50%. It's only 53%. Americans of and by themselves are really not that uptight, not that excited about immigration. So, that being the case, you've got a lukewarm response to a ship with 300-foot hole down the side of it that's going to sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes. And the captain and the crew are telling you to go back to your bunks, everything's going to be fine. And the people on board all believe that the ship is unsinkable. That's what happened on the Titanic. We got the very same thing happening in America today. You have the captain and the crew telling you everything's fine, going back to your bunks. And then you have the American people firmly believing that the American ship of state cannot sink. While at the same time, you have all of these immigrants in here, all of this water pouring into the ship, and it cannot sustain it. Now that's the analogy, and that's the way the game is being played. So this is the first round. I thought we'd bring this thing up. It's called illegal immigration. And bear in mind that this illegal immigration isn't going to stop. It's probably going to accelerate. And we're somewhere between 12, 20, or more million people in the country right now, illegally. An army is already here, an army of locusts eating out your substance. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archive, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.